This is Wyman and Bob
on Seattle Sports, powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the Seattle Sports app and at seattlesports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
You got the Mariners taking on the Rangers. Game one of that series coming your way this afternoon. We'll turn you over to the pregame show coming up at 4 p.m., so make sure you stay tuned for that. Meanwhile, we're also getting you ready for the NFL draft happening this Thursday. Round one, we will be live from the Virginia Mason Athletic Center. It'll be me, you, Bumpus, Brock Heward.
Yeah.
Right?
Brock will chime in a little bit, you know. We won't use him very much.
Nah, he doesn't have time to say much.
Brock is going to be great because, you know, he's seeing all these college players. You know, he's some of these guys he'll have seen three, four times. And
he'll have reviews of all of their physiques.
He'll have that also. All the research that he does in his bathtub. Yeah. That's where he does research for his game. So try to forget about that part.
Oh, geez.
But yeah, it's going to be fun. And I probably say this every year, but I'm really curious this year because of the newness. I mean, you've got a new coach. You've got the end of an era with Pete Carroll. And then, you know, you've got John just entirely in charge. And so we'll see.
Well, this is
what he comes up with.
Probably the two most interesting years they've had in a number of years, because they have been good for so many years that we've become kind of accustomed to them drafting 20 and below, 25 right. and below, and just, okay, they're going to even pick in the first round, they're going to trade it. And then last year was really exciting because they had the number 5 overall pick. They hadn't had a pick that high in the whole Pete Carroll era.
Mm-hmm.
So that was the highest draft pick they had in his 14-year tenure here. And then now this being the first year without Pete, whole new coaching staff. So these last year and this year, to me, probably the most intriguing they've had in over a decade. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and everything's just new. I mean, you got a new offense, a new defense. And I think really the one thing maybe that's not fair that we're kind of expecting almost is that Mike McDonald's defense is just going to be magical. I mean, it might take a while.
Can we expect it just to be better than it was last year?
Oh, God.
Is that a fair expectation, just to say it is a better defense than it was last year? How is it substantially better? I don't know. But can it just be – I feel like it's fair. I feel like I'm being fair to say you got to be better than what was out there on the field last year and the year before. It's been a rough couple of years, defensively speaking.
You know, it's interesting when you look at that, like 2010 and 11, like you didn't really know exactly what you had. I mean, John Schneider was hitting home runs, him and Pete, with, you know, guys like Cam Chancellor and, you know, getting Cliff Averill and, you know, drafting Richard Sherman and
KJ Wright.
KJ and Bobby and, you know, Bobby's second rounder, but still, you know, kind of late round guys. And you built just this absolutely legendary defense. Now, I don't know if it's because of that the last several years have been so frustrating to watch, but probably because it's the same coach and the same system and everything. And then somehow it got away from Pete. And, you know, and I think he stepped away. Pete doesn't do a lot wrong. That's for sure. I'm telling you. But, you know, I feel like I wish he'd been more involved.
More hands-on with the defense.
Yeah, because that was his defense. And, you know, and I think he kind of wanted everybody to know, hey, I'm not putting my hands on this. I'm going to let these guys do what they do. I'm going to hire assistants. They're going to, you know, handle the defense. And I don't think he really wanted to get involved. He wanted those guys to take it and run with it, and they just never did. So, yeah, it's been particularly frustrating. So I'm just hoping, like you said, just a little bit better.
Just be better. It's got to, however you measure that. You want to look at where they rank in these categories, you know, whatever, fine. But just when we're watching, I just want to feel better about what they're likely going to do. You know, because last year was like, all right, let's see what happens. Like, are they going to hold this lead? Are they going to be we'll see what happens.
Yeah.
There was just such a lack of certainty in watching that defense the past few years.
You know, the one thing I remember complaining about consistently back in 2012 and 13 when they were historically good was the middle of the field.
Oh, yeah. Seems like tight ends killed them even then.
Yeah, and they just and it's funny. I was looking at one of the linebackers. I'll have to go back and look at his name, but he was just so instinctive, a college kid who's a draftable guy, where he was just, you know, kind of like you always saw the linebackers drop back to a spot and turn around and look at the quarterback. Whereas You know, you got to get a feel for that guy's going to, he's trying to loop inside of you and get, you know, and I saw a guy adjust to that and actually get an interception. And, you know, I'm hoping that part of the field will get taken care of, because that's always been very frustrating to me. But, and look, that doesn't indicate anything about anyone like Cam Chancellor or Bobby Wagner. I mean, they're in the middle of the field. I just think it was a design flaw and it just got worse and worse and worse. So, yeah, I think, you know, that's at least one part of it. I mean, I'm just looking for anything to kind of hang on to. And, you know, they've never killed it as far as the sacks. They've never been like the Steelers, you know, that are getting 55, 60, or Philly, who got, what, 70 sacks the other couple
of
years ago.
When they were called Saxonville.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. So, you know, and we'll see just what comes out of this defense. But I'm very curious, and it's just a very interesting year this year. And this draft is, I think, particularly exciting for most Seahawks fans.
Well, and looking at all these mock drafts, you're seeing trends. You're seeing consistency in terms of certain names attached to the Seahawks. And again, we emphasize that doesn't mean that anybody's right. It's a guess. Some of it's based on conversations they have with front office connections they have, scouts, what have you. So all these guys putting their mocks together, it's coming from somewhere. But two names that we hear a lot, and it's on the defensive side of things, Jared Verse and Laiatu Latu. They're a couple names we hear. Certainly, Fautanu is another one that's always associated with them at 16. We'll see which side of the ball they drop. But if both of those guys are there, who do you like better, Verse or Latu?
It's easy for me. It's Laiatu Latu. I just think he's an incredibly polished pass rusher and just, I mean, like I said, I called him a ghost because these guys are blocking him and there's just no target for them to block. He's just constantly in motion. He's got great. Here's what I would say with Jared Verse. I was very impressed by him just because of his power.
Mm-hmm.
They kind of have that guy. They have a couple of them. They have Uchenna and they have Derek Hall. I think Derek Hall is very explosive and he's going to develop into that guy. But that was the thing about, I don't know, I just felt like he was kind of on a track, like not a lot of lateral movement. He blasts people. He knocks the crap out of them, Jared Verse does. But he doesn't have some of the skills. Now, you could say, hey, he can be taught that. Their pass rushing coaches will, you know, get him with the swim move and the rip move and all that stuff, spinning, all that, the stuff that Latu does. But I just think right now he's much more polished, and he was the one player I would say. I mean, I watched Troy Fautanu. I showed you that picture or that video where
spin.
He got out of position, and I've never seen an offensive lineman do this before. He spun back around the other way and got the block. So, yeah, he's really fascinating to watch. And, you know, you look at, like, Brock Bowers, his blocking is just unbelievable. He just wipes out an entire line. But, you know, when you watch Latu and his pass rush ability and he drops back, he's able to get interceptions. I mean, he's very versatile. I just think he's the best football player there.
Well, Daniel Jeremiah, he was on Green Light with Chris Long podcast. Haven't heard of that one, but he was on that podcast and describes why he thinks so highly of Latu.
He's easily the most skilled rusher. He reminded me a little bit of Hendrickson, because I remember when Hendrickson was coming out, I'm like, this guy just knows how to rush. Like, he can feel you overset. He kind of just feels it. It's like a little bit of kind of a just an instinct thing where he just got unbelievable instincts and hands.
He's an option.
So talking a bit about what you touched on there, and then he was asked about Jared Verse, and here's what he's, in his opinion, brings to a team.
I know what Verse is. Like, Verse is a very distinct style. Like, he is rugged and rough, and he's just going to be a car crash. Like, that's what he's going to do. Like, to me, you look at some guys like Judon was kind of like that coming out. Like, he's just going to test your brakes every single rush. And that's what Verse has a lot of similarities to Will Anderson. He's not as polished as Will Anderson was, but same build, same style. Hopefully, to me, like, a lot for him is going to be determined on where he goes and how they, like, if you just let him play in that jet front and kick him out and give him a runway, like, he's going to be good, man. He's going to go right through dudes.
He's a car crash.
I love it. That's a great, you know, description. And that's exactly what I saw. I saw him put a 325-pound guy right on his wallet, as Rabel would say. Just ran right through him. So, but again, I do think, you know, and maybe John thinks differently. I'm sure he does. But I feel like you kind of have that guy. How about a really skilled, polished pass rusher with Latu? And just a good football player. The other thing about him, he won the Lombardi Award, which is, you know, on and off the field, character, high character, things like that. So, you know, it's funny, Bob, when we started this whole thing with the first mock draft, and I don't know who we talked to, I can't remember, but he said Jared Verse, he brought his name up, and I think he was at like number 23 or 24, and whoever it was said, there's not a lot of pass rushers in this draft, and Verse was the only guy in the first round.
Mm.
So, now you've seen a few. Dallas Turner, and you see this Latu, and I think there's another couple pass rushers in there now. So, yeah, those things develop as the season goes on. But, yeah, he was the only guy that they had there in the first round.
Well, Joel Klatt was on with Brock and Salk, and he breaks down who he would take if both Verse and Latu are available there.
If you're just going based on the play on the field, I think Latu would be your guy. But as we know, these decisions are not made in that type of vacuum. I think that the neck injury, you know, issues from Washington, you guys are well versed in that and what happened. I get it that, like, he got cleared and he was phenomenal at UCLA. But the neck injury stuff is just a scary deal. And Jared Verse has proven that he is and can be incredibly productive. Now, I think Latu is probably a more instinctive player. I would probably take Verse, though. Yeah, you can't miss in the first round, and the injury issue I think is just a red flag.
Interesting that he said, well, you guys know about that there, because you and I talked about that the other day. I think off the air, just kind of recounting all the neck injuries that have. It was Cam Chancellor, it was Cliff Averill, it was Ricardo Lockett, it's Max Strong. DK had a neck injury coming out of college.
He did.
So, yeah, it feels like it's been a number of players where that's either ended their career or it's been a concern with them, with the Seahawks I'm speaking of specifically, and I think that's what Joel Klatt is referencing there.
I feel like, you know, the guy that's most okay with it is Latu, because I don't care what level of football player you are, if you got a neck injury, like for Mac, what was he, in his 12th year or something like that? He's like, yeah, it's a no-brainer.
Yeah.
I'm not going to mess with my neck. So,
yeah, you know. Same with Cliff had played a number of years, and even though he was still fantastic, he could, you know, he knew better than to try to push that. And same with Cam. Cam, all those guys had more football left in them, certainly.
Yeah, Cliff especially. And I remember Cliff was, his helmet, like his mask, face mask, fell on the guy's ankle.
I think it was Jacoby Brissett.
Yeah, so, I mean, it was just kind of a strange deal, but like you're that point, and the doctors will chime in and tell you, you know, hey, look, this is a huge risk. I doubt that it's that big of a deal, that it's that much of a risk. However, if everything is equal for John Schneider, he's going to take Jared Verse, because they're very picky about the injuries. Now, they did draft DK.
Yeah.
And that is one interesting, and I think, you know, you say neck injury, well, they're not all the same.
Certainly,
You know, you look at some of the, you know, the one like Lockett. I mean, those are kind of no-brainers. Like I said, you just don't mess around with that. But, yeah, it seems like we'll see. We'll see from John. I mean, if that's ends up being an issue afterwards and say, hey, what did you think about him? You know, maybe it is. Like I said, I don't know this for a fact, but it just seems like they're pretty picky about, you know, who they draft based on the injury history.
Taking a look at some of the UW prospects out there, some of which have been attached to the Seahawks. Obviously, Troy Fautanu being the most prominent of which, and we've sort of had the daydream about Michael Penix and where he may go, and if he lands, if he's still sitting there at 16, do the Seahawks pull the trigger on him? We'll find out. But Josh Edwards, CBS Sports, breaks down the questions people still seem to have about Michael Penix.
It is his injury past. You know, it's a little bit scary, but I have not heard from any teams that the medicals were a big concern. So it sounds like he has checked that. But I do think in the back of their mind, there are some teams that are a little bit leery of his past. I think more so the issue for me is just that he's not that creative pass routes out of the pocket. He is predominantly a pocket passer, and he hasn't quite shown what you would hope in terms of secondary movement. So I think that's where it's limiting. And I think he has the capability to do that. I think it's his preference to operate in the pocket, and maybe there's some hesitancy because of the injuries in his past. But when you look at the guys that are often mentioned alongside of him, the Drake Mays of the world, the Caleb Williams, they've shown a little bit more creativity outside of the pocket.
The injury thing is interesting. I thought he nailed it in the Players Tribune thing that he wrote. We read that yesterday, where he talked about, and I'm again paraphrasing, that, you know, in a way the injuries are a good thing, because you see how I've responded to those, how I've overcome those obstacles, and you've seen, what do you say, 2,000 plus passes since my last injury and what I've done with that. And, you know, if you want a measurement of who I am as a player, you're going to need an EKG. This is about his heart. And he talked about, you know, other players who haven't been injured. You don't know how they respond. Do they bounce back? Do they play it, you know, out of fear at that point? Are they different players after a severe injury? I mean, everybody responds differently. You know how he responds. And I thought it was really well done, what he wrote.
I did, too. It was almost like he wrote it. Oh, wait, he did write it. I thought it was very thoughtful. We got that from him when he came in here. Yeah. Very thoughtful kid. I know Gino was talking about him, saying what a good dude he is and all that. But it's kind of weird, because I still would say, I was just telling this to John Schneider the other day, that we were talking about drafting and all that stuff, and how when I got my knee dislocation, I don't think I was ever the same player after that. Like I feared no evil. When I was a junior, like I was on the way to being, I felt like I could crush anybody. And then when that happened, I was very much humbled. Mm-hmm. And now, I mean, I'm not complaining, because I still made it into the NFL and everything. But the other thing I would say that I gained from it is knowing that I could overcome that. I felt like I could pretty much not only overcome, you know, any kind of injury, but other things in life. You know, because it took so much discipline, and, you know, just had to every single day be on it, and, you know, doing all the, you know, different bike rides, and, you know, and I just became a much harder worker. And I think
the PT and everything.
And I feel like a lot of that, and that's why that really resonated with me, what he wrote there, because, yeah, I mean, there's lots of guys that go through things like that, and they go, you know what, I wouldn't change it. And I'm kind of that way. I mean, I would like to have seen what kind of linebacker I could have been without the, you know, knee dislocation, but I still think just in my life in general, it has helped me. And so for Penix to be able to overcome that and, you know, just get through it, and it doesn't even seem like it's a thing. You watch how he plays. He doesn't play like he's a guy who's had knee injuries.
Man, he ran a hell of a 40. He
ran a great 40, so. Yeah.
Yeah, he does not play scared. He does not look like a guy who's hesitant or trying to, you know, he's dumping the ball off quick as soon as there's pressure. He panics. He's got happy feet. You don't see any of the ghosts out there that some do after they get injured.
Well, remember the Texas game when we were just raved about that, how he was constantly, he had people diving at his legs, and he's just eyes downfield, not worrying about that. So, yeah, I don't know if that would be a big deal for John. They're pretty particular, but it sure doesn't seem to be. And I bet you if you asked him, he would say, yeah, I wouldn't change anything.
Yeah. One more here. This is from Joel Klatt, who explains why, in the case of Troy Fautanu, why there's such a wide range of spots where he could go in the first round.
The fact that he can have some position versatility to me is highly valuable. He's aggressive. He's got great hands. You know, all of those things. He would be tough to pass up. I really like him as a prospect. The hard part for Troy, candidly, this is a deep offensive lineman draft. So there's a lot of guys, and I think the evaluation will be different for everybody. Mims is a good player at Georgia. Guyton is a good player at Oklahoma. J.C. Latham, he's a good player from Alabama. Fuaga from Oregon State. Alt, obviously, Olu Fashanu. Like, there's a lot of good offensive linemen. So, unfortunately for him, I feel like his range is fairly wide based on those little evaluation margins from team to team.
I think it's interesting also with Fautanu that, you know, he played tackle at Washington, and everybody's pretty much talking about him as being a guard.
Yeah.
And, you know, that typically, like the one guy, I think it was Graham Barton, I was talking about how he had kind of short arms. Mm-hmm. Like, that's a problem out on the edge, but like if you're inside, if you're a guard or a center, I don't think it's that big of a deal. But I mean, here's a guy that's moving to a spot where he's really, really athletic, like athletic enough to be a tackle. It kind of reminds me a little bit of Penei Sewell, who got drafted by the Lions out of, was that out Oregon? I I think he might have been. Yeah. So he was just a phenomenal athlete, and they're moving him inside where there's kind of lesser athletes live inside, right? But guard is getting to be a really interesting position from the fact that they're, I want to say they're hard to find, but they're in demand because when you look at the salary cap numbers, or the, I'm sorry, the franchise tag numbers,
yeah,
they're up much higher than I thought, than I ever would have thought.
Well,
I
think we saw the deal Damian Lewis signed, and it was like, my goodness.
What was that, a $52 million deal or something like that?
Something like that. It was much, much more than I ever anticipated he would get.
Yeah. So, I mean, yeah, guard, you know, it used to be, guards are... You know, it was Alex Gibbs. He was the coach. He was here for a little while, but I know he was in Denver when I was there. And he's like, get me a tackle. I can get a bum standing on the highway to play guard. I mean, literally, he had no respect for guards. And he was an offensive line coach.
Sounds like disdain for guards, much less lack of respect.
Well, I think his guys knew that he was joking mostly, but I mean, that was kind of how they were. And Mark Schlereth always talks about that. He's like, I'm the next step after me becomes a fan.
Yeah.
Right? The next player after me, as far as athletic ability goes, is a fan. So. Yeah, I mean, it's kind of interesting, though, how I've not heard anybody talk about playing him at tackle.
No, and he even talked about it before and saying, you know, I consider myself a tackle, but hey, man, I'm gonna
do whatever.
Get in where I fit in. So he's willing to play wherever. All right, coming up, will offseason adjustments be the difference for Bryce Miller and Logan Gilbert this time in Texas? We're going to talk some Mariner baseball. Coming up with Wyman and Bob, this is Seattle Sports on 710.
Wyman and Bob.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
On Seattle Sports and the Seattle Sports app.
We got the Mariners and Rangers getting set to kick things off this afternoon. We'll turn you over to the pregame show coming up at 4 o'clock. Game one of that series coming up. Looking forward to this. This should be a good barometer for this Mariner team who have won two series in a row after not winning any of their opening series, or the first few series of the season. They split with the Red Sox, and then they lost each series after that.
That kind of bummed you out. They lost that game in Colorado, extra innings game.
Yeah, I try to keep it in perspective. I mean, they're not a good team, and in
they're really bad.
Yeah, they're not. They're bad. They're not a good team. But going on the road and expecting a sweep to me is not realistic. Are they capable? Absolutely. Certainly. Should they have? Looking at the way that game played out, I think that, what'd we say? They were one for nine with runners in scoring position. They stranded 10. I mean, they had their opportunities. They just didn't get it done that day. But you won the series. That's the goal going in there. And that'll be the goal going into Texas. You want to win the series. But to answer your question, yeah, it bumps me out because it was right there. It was there to be had.
Yeah, and that was such an exciting game, too. I really enjoyed that game until the very end, anyway.
Yeah.
It's kind of like your life, you know. It's great until the very end.
Till the end. I don't like the ending.
Then you die.
Then you die. That's not the ending I'm hoping for. But we've got Logan Gilbert, Bryce Miller, some guys that we'll see who are off to great starts, both of them. Bryce Miller in 2023 versus the Rangers. Now, this is a guy who gets called up. Maybe much sooner than you anticipated due to injuries, but he had two starts against the Rangers. 6 2/3 innings pitch, 14 hits, 13 earned runs, 4 Ks, 3 walks. That's a 17.55 ERA, and both of those starts were in Arlington.
Yeah.
So that's the bad news. That was last year. He seems to be a bit of a different pitcher, and he was good last year. He certainly had some great moments. But he's added to his arsenal. He's got that splitter now to handle lefties, and he's been on a tremendous roll since he had his first start of the year wasn't great. And each one since has been really, really good. So I just feel like we're looking at different guys, especially in his case, where this is his first full season. You're looking at a different version. That's not the same Bryce Miller.
Yeah, it's amazing. I mean, you look at, like you said, it was kind of what I expected, I guess, from him. I mean, him and Wu were the question marks coming in. So the very first outing against Boston, as you mentioned, 5 innings, 4 earned runs, gave up a couple home runs, walked a couple. But, man, after that, it's been 7 innings, 6.16. I mean, it's, you know, he's given up 1 home run and 1 earned run. Since then, that is phenomenal. So I think he has been maybe the biggest surprise on this entire team. I mean, I don't know, Class A coming up and doing what he did. It's not like it's just phenomenal, but, you know, he's batting 250 or whatever, and that was a nice little boost for an injury. And then, yeah, I think as far as, and especially as far as the pitchers go, I don't know, maybe it's Thornton or some of the guys out of the bullpen, but Bryce Miller just been an incredibly pleasant surprise. Now, maybe it shouldn't be a surprise because they develop pitchers. Yeah. I mean, that's just what they do. They just develop pitches. Yeah, they don't develop hitters necessarily, but they're able, not at the rate anyway that they do with the pitchers. So yeah, it's probably shouldn't be a surprise, but I'm really happy about it because I didn't really expect that much from him, I guess.
Yeah, it's good to see what he's done. I'm excited to see how they match up this year, this version of Bryce Miller versus the Rangers, and how he stacks up there. And then, you know, Logan Gilbert, you and I both talked about him before the season started, and we talked about who are the all-stars on this team. We both had him as one of them. Yeah. I think he's just set.
Who are the other ones? For me, Julio, of course.
Julio was the obvious.
Haniger
was my wild card. It was Haniger, Julio, Kirby, Gilbert. Those are my four.
I'm wondering if I threw Cal Raleigh in there just for sentimental reasons.
Because you love him so much.
We love Cal. Love Cal. He's so important to that team, man. I mean, you think about all the things that he does at the, you know, behind the plate, throwing out runners, all that. But the management of the rotation is, I think, very undersold as far as what he does best.
He's a leader. He's a guy they count on and rely on for a lot of different things. But just getting back to the pitching, Jeff Passan talking about, you know, we just talked about the splitter that Bryce Miller added to handle lefties specifically, but talked about what that's done for him.
When you have a fastball that grades out as well as this one does, and doesn't just grade out well, but induces the sorts of feeble swings that it has, you don't see many guys who are throwing 60%+ fastballs anymore. I think the splitter allows Bryce Miller to throw as many fastballs as he does, because otherwise guys are just going to sit fastball. And it doesn't matter how good your fastball is, how much ride it has, how much run it has, or what the properties and characteristics are. If you're throwing 60%+ fastballs in 2024, guys are just going to sit on it and tee off on it. But what the splitter does is it mimics the fastball, right?
Right.
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know how you hit in Major League Baseball. It's crazy watching the pitches that that these batters are facing. I mean, some of these, they go like 75% of the way. It's right down the middle. And then all of a sudden, boop.
Yeah, by the time they start their swing, as they've started their motion, the ball's changing direction.
And how do you recognize that? I mean, I think
that's the art of the pitch. The
you have
deception.
To get lucky.
That's right. You're swinging at a ball you think is gonna, you know, tail over the plate, and it goes the other way. By the time your swing is completed, it looks like you missed it by a good 3-4 inches. You know, so it can make you look silly out there with some of these pitches. But Jeff Passan talked about Miller, and he was asked if he can get to the level of Kirby and Gilbert.
Yes, I think his stuff's really good. I think, and the thing is, like, adding pitches. You know, when a pitcher adds something, we tend to say, well, you know, maybe it'll play, maybe it won't. We don't know. Adds the splitter this year. And it has become, you know, out the gate, a very good pitch to start off with. And, you know, I understand he had his changeup, and, you know, he was throwing a curveball last year that he's more or less ditched this year. But man, the split for Miller could be a real game changer long term.
I always thought that if I had to go up and face a major league pitcher and just to see if I could get a hit, I would just close my eyes, and then I would have somebody like Cal say, tell me when to swing, okay?
Just now.
Yeah, now. It's the ball still in his hand.
he's bent over at the waist looking in, waiting for the signal. He's telling you to swing.
I mean, it just
he could have fun with you.
It is crazy how ridiculous it is, the pitchers and what they're doing. So, and, you know, thankfully not, I mean, we had Wu. When is Wu scheduled to come back?
They haven't set a date.
I haven't said anything yet, but he's the one guy that's Well, you're still waiting on a couple of guys, I guess, Brash and Santos. But and the bullpen hasn't suffered because of that, really. I mean, they've been fairly solid. But, you know, you look at Logan and, you know, he had the one, you know, at Milwaukee, I think it was. Yeah, where he gives up 4 earned runs. But other than that, 1 earned run per outing. So he's been solid. It's really cool to watch. I feel like the Mariners don't get enough credit for developing their pitchers. And, you know, especially like in the bullpen, that they just have a system of bringing guys in and they're just solid and it works for them. And it's something that I feel like, yeah, we complain about the hitting all the time, but the pitching is we're blessed.
Yeah, it's been a constant. It's been very, very good. One more from Passan talking about Gilbert and talking about his cutter, in his opinion, has been unhittable.
And I'm going to go to Logan Gilbert actually to start with here, because I think it's important to illustrate what is capable of happening when you add pitchers. Last year adds the splitter, right? New dimension comes out in his game. This year adds a cutter. And let me tell you guys, it's not just any old cutter. If you look at Stuff Plus, which is, you know, a metric that looks at the shape of a pitch, the quality of a pitch, Logan Gilbert's cutter is like the best among starters in baseball by Stuff Plus so far this year. It's an elite pitch out of the gate. And we're talking about a guy who throws a bunch of really good pitches already.
Bunch of really good pitches already. So, yeah, they both added to their arsenal. And it's so far you're seeing the results. Sure, there'll be some speed bumps along the way. They're not going to have 32 perfect starts. But, man, this entire staff has started to live up to what the expectations were coming into the season. And that is fun to watch. It takes some of the heat off of the guys that are struggling in the lineup, whether you're talking about Julio or JP or anybody. When your pitching is doing what they're doing, gives you a little bit of breathing room to, all right, let's regroup here. If there's somebody who's, you know, whether it's, you know, like I said, JP looked like he's starting to find a little bit. Julio's coming up with hits. Hopefully the power starts to show. But, man, it's just what they've done with pitching has been amazing. All right, coming up, two likely scenarios could play out for the Seahawks in the first round. We'll take a look at both of those scenarios. Coming up with Wyman and Bob, this is Seattle Sports on 710.
Wyman and Bob.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
On Seattle Sports and the Seattle Sports app.
We got the Mariners and Rangers coming up. Pre-game show at 4:00, so stay tuned for that. Game one of their series. We're hoping for much better luck than they had in Arlington last year, where they were, would you say, 0-6, Levko? 0-6?
Yeah, 0-6 last year.
I think you put it 0 for Arlington.
0 for Arlington, yeah.
A good slogan that'll hopefully end.
Hopefully it's week. Not of use after today. Let's get the first one out of the way right now. Let's just win today. How about that?
Okay.
Why don't we just go ahead and get that message to him, Levko? I don't know if you got the bat phone there. You can just tell him. Let's get the win today.
The broadcast is about to start pregame, yeah. So we'll just stay on air and chime in with that.
Yeah, just get this message down to Scott. We'd like a win today if we're going to pick a day.
I want you guys to really try to win this one. Okay?
I want you to really give this one some effort, guys.
Remember that was Slapshot. remember where the old man who's the owner that comes in or runs it? And he's, guys, I really want you to try to win tonight. Thanks for the pep talk. Appreciate it.
Oglethorpe. Yeah.
Oglethorpe.
Such a good movie. So a couple of scenarios that the Seahawks could be facing on Thursday night. They've got the 16th overall pick, and we've kind of touched on this one, that Penix, Fautanu, and Latu could all be available there. They could all be available at 16. I think we threw Brock Bowers into it.
Yeah,
were talking before.
I think that my four anyway are Penix first and foremost.
You're putting these in order.
Yes.
Okay.
And then after that, gosh, I think I'd have to go Fautanu.
Okay.
Honestly, as much as I like Latu, and then, you know, with Bowers, I don't know. You know, Fautanu, Bowers, never mind. I'm going Penix, Bowers, Fautanu, then Latu.
Throw in Verse. Really like what if Verse is there too?
Verse, he can be afterwards.
He's after all those guys.
After all that stuff. No, but I mean.
So wait, say it again.
We've got it surrounded. We've got it surrounded, Bob. Penix, then Bowers.
Brock Bowers, number two. This is assumed, the hypothetical, they're all sitting there at 16, yeah. and the Seahawks have not moved.
Then Fautanu, then Latu.
Okay.
Yeah, so we add an extra one here, but he's going to trade out, and we're going to all look stupid.
No, no. You can't look. The only way you look dumb trying to predict the Seahawks is if you say with absolute certainty, this is what they're going to do.
Yeah.
That's when you look bad, because we've all learned. All the listeners know. You're guessing. We're all guessing what they're going to do. They never tip their hand. They You think they're going right, they go left. It's just it's what they've always done, so it's a fool's errand. We're all on the same page here.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I texted one of my friends who is a scout for the Seahawks, and I was like, hey, I was looking at Latu. I think he's the best pass rusher in the entire draft. And he was like, he has some skill, and he used all the scouting talk. And I go, you know what? Mine sounded way better. That's why you're a scout, and I'm a radio guy.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, even that, even, you know, talking to one of my friends, he's like, not giving anything away. I mean, if he'd have said, oh, my God, he's an unbelievable pass rusher and developed, blah, blah, blah.
Or he could have said, no, you nailed it. You're right.
Yeah. yeah, he never answered my question. I said, is he the best? You know, and then I asked, you know, are there better quarterbacks than Penix? Yes. That's all I got. And I shouldn't have answered that question or asked the question that way. I should have, you know, led him a different way. But, yeah, they are very tight-lipped. And I don't know. You have to ask Schneider about that. Maybe we'll talk to him about
their
that.
Ability to keep a secret.
Yeah. I mean, I know Pearson's a huge part of it.
I wonder if they do get together as a staff to, you know, they bring in new members and, you know, changes, what have you. If they just have a meeting like, all right, guys, just to reiterate for those of you that have been here and those that are new, here's how we handle things.
Yeah. Well, and no cameras are allowed up there and where they have their draft room and everything. I hear that they get out like a brand and you get branded also.
That's like your credential.
Yeah. Like like in Yellowstone. They've done a phenomenal job over the years. I think that's one of John's things, right? It's like tight-lipped. We're not talking about anything. Yeah, they're picky about the injuries. But,
state secrets, man.
Yeah.
By the way, is branding still a thing in college? I remember you used to always see those guys with the scarred up, you know, logos on their arm or whatever. Is that still? I feel like I don't see that as much. Is that still the thing?
I'm gonna say there was a fraternity. It was Omega. And
is it a frat or is it the logo of the team?
No, it was like a frat thing. And I remember a guy had it branded on at the combine, and it was like it bubbled up so it looked like a snake almost. And yeah, I don't see that as much.
Yeah. Yeah, but you see those guys playing through the years that have the big scars, and it's like, ugh. I don't know. They reminded me when you said branding. All right, so there's scenario one. Everybody's available that we've talked about. Who do you go with? The other scenario, they trade back. What do you think is more likely? If you were going to, if they said, here's $100, you got to bet it on what you think they're going to do. They're going to pick at 16, or they're going to trade out of that, either up or down. You never know. They could go
$100.
Up.
Let's make it interesting.
Well, it's just something to where you had to put money on the outcome.
I'll bet Bob's salary.
$74 on?
Here's what I would say about that. And a good question. I would say because I think there is going to be a run on quarterbacks that they're going to pick. They're going to take the number 16 pick and take hopefully one of those four guys just so I look good. But whoever they think is the best player, obviously. But we talk about Penix, Fautanu, Latu, and Bowers.
And maybe Verse.
Yeah, maybe Verse. Yeah, we'll see. I don't know. I just feel like they have that guy. I mean, who was it that was doing the breakdown? It was fairly...
Jeremiah or Klatt?
Yeah, Daniel Jeremiah. And it was fairly similar to what, you know, what I was talking about with him. Like, he just is, he's a force, man. He plays aggressive. A car crash, yeah. Kind of feel like they have a couple of guys like that. So, but again, like we always talk about, that they don't need that guy. Oh, okay, for sure they'll pick him.
Yeah.
They didn't need a corner last year.
To me, the most unlikely thing they do is trade up.
Yeah.
So that means they're going to do it.
Well, you know what? I think John has traded up like twice. One of them was to get Tyler Lockett.
Yeah.
But I think it's only like two or three times that they have ever traded up. So we'll have to ask John that as well.
But yeah.
I'm sure he remembers every single one of those. But, you know, it's funny. You feel like personally attached. So for me, I'm spending maybe 30 minutes, 45 minutes on each player, looking at everything and their history and all that
now
stuff.
Now you love them all.
Yeah, and you fall in love with these players. And it'll be fun to watch these guys. But, sorry, I missed the claw. The claw! We better get out of here.
From both guys.
We better get out of here.
I love it. All right, we got the Mariners. We got the Rangers. They were 0 for Arlington last season. Is it going to change? Let's change it tonight. Let's hope the Mariners get the win tonight. You got the pregame show coming your way next. If you missed any part of today's show, just head to the podcast page at seattlesports.com. Click the podcast tab. Click on our picture. It's right there waiting for you. Have a great night, everybody. We're back tomorrow with Wyman and Bob.